This is Bill Brenner for SearchSecurity.com. You're listening to our Security Wire Weekly podcast for October 3rd, 2007. This week, I talked to Code Green CEO Srikanth Ravi about why his company is gearing its latest data protection offering toward SMBs. Also, Google fixes a serious Gmail flaw. We begin with news about the latest data security breach. Personal data on 800,000 job applicants at Gap Incorporated were exposed to potential identity fraud when a laptop belonging to a third-party contractor was stolen, the retailer acknowledged Friday. Gap said a laptop containing the social security numbers of certain job applicants was recently stolen from the offices of a, quote, experienced, end quote, third-party vendor that manages job application data for the San Francisco-based retailer. Gap has begun notifying the job applicants whose social security numbers were included in the information on the laptop, and is offering them a year of free credit monitoring services with fraud resolution assistance, along with a dedicated 24-hour helpline. The stolen data belongs to 800,000 people who applied online or by phone for store positions at one of Gap's stores, including Old Navy and Banana Republic, between July 2006 and June of this year. The retailer didn't name the third-party contractor tasked with managing its data, but was quick to accuse the contractor of violating an agreement with Gap by not encrypting the laptop data. Srikanth Ravi was a co-founder of SonicWall, where he and his brother worked to commoditize firewalls for the SMB market. Now the CEO of Code Green Networks, Ravi hopes to achieve more success in the SMB market by making data protection technology more affordable for smaller companies with tighter IT security budgets. He recently sat down with me to discuss how SMBs can prevent data breaches with his company's new CI750 content inspection appliance. He also discusses the future of Code Green in an industry that has seen steady consolidation in recent years.
You're reaching out with this product to the small offices, branch offices. Does that have anything to do with the fact that I know that you've mentioned it before, the Small Business Technology Institute survey, in which two-thirds of small businesses in the U.S. Acknowledged that they don't have an information security plan, and that more than half had admitted that they had experienced a security breach. So are we looking at a situation where this is particularly a problem with the smaller businesses because they don't have the money to throw around on some of the bigger security technologies?
That's exactly right. You've hit it on the head. And in fact, it's not just the budget aspect of it. It's also the ease of use and the functionality aspects of it. So our solution encompasses all of the features that enterprise-class solutions in this segment provide, specifically protection of structured and unstructured data, as well as other algorithms that provide support for accurately detecting leakage of information. More broadly, the most simple analogy I can draw is that the local community bank or credit union, because of the vertical that they're in, need to comply with the same rules and regulations at the state and federal level that Citicorp needs to comply with. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't have the resources, the IT resources, or the budget to be able to do that. So our CI750 is specifically targeted, as you say, at small single-site locations as well as branch offices of larger environments.
And now talk about the feedback that you get from these smaller businesses as far as the when they talk about the difficulties they're having securing their data and what some of the consequences have been. What are they telling you?
Sure. The key things that they're looking for guidance on is that there's a lot of complexity with these rules and regulations, and at a very topical level, it has to do with personal information protection and the safeguarding of intellectual property. So if you use those two as the primary drivers, small organizations don't have risk compliance teams on staff as larger companies do. And so the complexity behind the rules and regs is something that they want to be turnkey. So what we've done is we've read through those rules and regulations and essentially taken those, you know, written codified laws and translated them into policy templates in our solution. So we effectively have several dozen policy templates which are using plain English. They're called California 1386, they're called GLB, they're called HIPAA. So it's very simple for a layperson who does double duty as not just the compliance officer in this case, but the IT person and maybe multiple other roles in the organization, including desktop support or whatever it might be, and the CIO. You know, in a small 100 or 200 person credit union, this person wears multiple hats and they don't have the time to get into the detail of what these compliance requirements might be. So we make it very, very easy for them from that perspective. The second thing is that when they do deploy the product, they want it to be extremely easy, and our appliance packaging, our low acquisition cost, our ability to deliver that solution through a channel, through a VAR that they already have an existing relationship with, all of those things makes it very, very easy to do. And we've integrated all of the key components that, for instance, the FTC, which is the one of the major set of guidelines today that these organizations are looking to comply with, we satisfy the requirements that they're imposing. So this is the first time that I've seen a federal organization, a governmental agency, saying that for best practice guidelines, you need to deploy a content monitoring and filtering or a DLP solution. You need to do policy-based SMTP encryption. Otherwise, if you don't comply with those best practice guidelines, now you're on the hook for penalties, which could be pretty stiff. And those penalties are being doled out now to organizations, regardless of size, if they don't comply with these regs and they have a violation of personal information. Mm-hmm. So we make it very easy for them to deploy it. We use plain English in our policy template, so it's easy to checkbox a template and start enabling it. And lastly, I'd say that the type of experience that we've had is, you know, they're looking to get in compliance, and the type of examples that they use are, you know, I have this business practice written down in a policy handbook. I don't know if my employees are complying to it. How do I check? Mm-hmm. So by deploying our box off of a network tap or off a spanner mirror port, instantaneously they can see into the traffic. Our box can filter 400 different document types, all the popular ones and a bunch of other arcane ones. We can do it across multiple TCP protocols, including webmail, including wikis and blogs, SMTP, of course, FTP, SSL. So they can peer into those protocols and see if people are following the written policies that may be available to them, but the IT person doesn't know if they're adhering to it. So one common example is when there's some sort of nefarious activity going on, a user may start a thread on SMTP, but then they worry that somebody might be looking at what they're doing, and so they quickly change the thread to their Google Mail or Hotmail account. Till now, we have not seen a solution that can parse those popular consumer webmail applications and make them look like a regular email session, because I don't, you know, similar to maybe what you do, I come in the morning, open up a web browser, and it's open for 8 hours, you know, during the time that I'm at the office. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to understand where the specific email session is within that 8-hour stream versus, you know, some grocery shopping or you're surfing Yahoo or something for news or whatever it might be. So we've written all those parsers and have enabled the ability to peer into those webmail sessions specifically for things that might violate policy. So you're not looking over the employee's shoulder for what they're ordering for tonight's grocery list, but you're setting a policy that says, if I see more than 5 credit card numbers or these project names, or if I see engineering source code being uploaded to a wiki site, those are things that I care about.
What I want to do now is take a look at Code Green and what your hopes and dreams are there. As you know, there's a lot of consolidation going on, particularly your big IT infrastructure vendors buying up security firms in an effort to build security more into what they're selling.
Yep.
Talk about what your hope is for Code Green. Is it the goal to stay an independent company, or are there circumstances where If somebody came along with an acquisition offer you would be interested in, talk about where your mind is with that.
Sure. So I can give you a couple of ways to look at that. First of all, I'm not the sole owner of the business as much as I'd like to be.
Right.
So we have raised $32 million in equity, so we have a couple of venture partners who have a significant ownership in the company as well as board representation.
Mm-hmm.
So as a group, we would do what's best for the stakeholders, including the employees, who are key stakeholders of the business.
Sure.
Having said that, I went through this exact same scenario at my last two startups, so this is my third startup,
mm-hmm.
and SonicWall was, of course, the last one, which I ran for a dozen years, and the same situation happened there. There was a lot of consolidation. A lot of the bigger IT suppliers were getting into the market through acquisition, including Cisco and Checkpoint and, you know, Juniper and many others. And we stayed independent because we felt that it was important to have an independent solution, because many organizations and channel partners will align themselves behind one of the major vendors or another. So we wanted to have an independent view of how we looked at the technology and how we delivered it. And that turned out to be a good path. I don't think any of these paths are right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And in this case particularly, there is a lot of potential synergy opportunities with strategic partnerships, and those are things that we're investigating.
Finally this week, Google has fixed a serious flaw in its popular Gmail application. The problem is a cross-site scripting flaw attackers could exploit to silently forward emails and contacts from a remote user's account to any email account he or she chooses. The security hole was uncovered by GNU Citizen, a hacking group that tracks Web 2.0 application flaws, and comes into play when a user logged into Gmail visits a malicious website laced with attack code. The site performs an action that injects a filter into the user's Gmail filter list. Petro Petkoff, the GNU Citizen researcher who discovered the flaw, confirmed in the GNU Citizen blog that Google has fixed the vulnerability. As a result, he's released the full proof of concept code showing how the exploit works. While Google says it hasn't received any reports of users being victimized via this flaw, security experts are recommending that users log in and check their filter to be sure nothing fishy has happened. Petkov had warned that even with a fix, the security risks could continue until the rigged filter is removed. And that'll do it for this week. The latest information security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. You can also catch our Security Wire weekly podcasts featuring summaries of the latest news and interviews with security professionals at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Again, that's searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Bill Brenner. As always, thanks for listening.